Good morning and welcome. My name is Renee Deschard. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I am the Prairie Fire newsletter editor, and I am on the program committee, and the design committee, and the search committee, and I think the communication committee. I'm on a lot of committees. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, family structure, age, or abilities. Later in the service, we will invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They are either presented by a Prairie member, like today, or a member of the wider community. Also, congrats to everyone who braved the snow that's still falling. I label you as true Wisconsinites. Snow is no barrier. Opening words today are "To Love Life" by Daniel Chesney Cantor, and Barb Park will be reading them.
To love life is to notice the wonders that abound. And to notice the wonders that abound is to be grounded here and now. And to be grounded here and now is the beginning of finding love for this life today. Let us ground ourselves in this instant in the worship of all things good and right.
Next, we have the chalice lighting. It's "Let Us Look First the Response of Love," and it's by Maureen Killeran, and it is John Germant coming to read it.
In these hard times, let us look first to the response of love. In the midst of challenge, may our chalice flame bear witness to the inherent worth and dignity of every human being. In the midst of uncertainty, may our chalice be a beacon to the encouragement that our values may guide our choices. Let us look first to the response to love of love.
Thank you. All right, so it's time for our presentation. 5 love languages presented by Robin and myself. Robin Proud has been a UU for over 40 years. Woo! She speaks regularly to Unitarian groups on subjects from literature to women's history, and we've had many an awesome service from Robin. And I earned a Bachelor of Science in Elementary Education from UW-Madison and a Master of Library and Information Science from University of Washington, Seattle. I went to 2 UWs, not on purpose, not sure how that happened. I worked pre-K through 12th grade public schools as a school librarian. And Robin's going to start out our presentation, and then I'm going to kind of interject, because I read the children's one and the singles version of this.
Should I put it in the mic stand?
So here's a typical scene in a marriage counselor's office. So there's a couple, say John and Jane, are unhappy and unsure if they can stay in their marriage. And Jane says, "It seems like he doesn't love me anymore. He's always at work or outside working on the yard. When he comes in, he doesn't talk to me." And the husband says, "Well, how can she think that? I work all day. I come home, take care of everything. And when I try to get close to her, she pulls away." Well, not only are these two people talking about different things, they aren't even really understanding each other's complaints. So Gary Chapman is a Christian minister and marriage counselor. He created the concept of the 5 love languages over 25 years ago. So how many people have read this book, The 5 Love Languages? A few. He does include some Christian references in his books, but that's not necessary to understanding his main approach. And actually, this is not unique. This kind of analysis exists all over the place. Has anybody ever had a Myers-Briggs personality test? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Momentarily scooching.
Oh, yeah. I'm blocking the...
Because you're in the middle of the...
Blocking the screen. Okay.
There we go.
Or you might have taken some kind of assessment at work. There's one called the DISC, D-I-S-C model. There's one where you have different colors, red or yellow. And all of these are designed to categorize people's communication style or leadership style, learning style. And the point is not to label people or limit, but it's to make us more aware of our own tendencies and those of our family members or coworkers, so we can work together better. It might be helpful if you're on a committee with someone to know something about that. And it helps us appreciate those who are different from us. On a work team, I'd be happy to be the one that gets up and gives the presentation to management, but I also need my colleague who's very detail-oriented to make sure we have all the statistics right. Anyone who has been in sales knows, for some customers, all they need to know is that the car is red and goes fast. And other customers want the Consumer Reports rating of reliability and mileage. If you try to present the wrong information to that customer, you're just wasting your time. Or as another book title puts it, I'm not crazy, I'm just not you. So the original book, The Five Love Languages, How to Express Heartfelt Communication to Your Mate, was published in 1992. There have been updates. There are a number of offshoots, for instance, dealing with children, which Renee is going to talk about some of these. And yesterday, I received a magazine from Toastmasters, which I belong to, and they had an article, I guess because of February, about the five love languages and how you can use that in your Toastmasters group. So it's something that's out there. Let's look at the overall structure of the book. So most relationships start with the in-love experience. Scientists have called this limerence. They said it's actually something different from love. It's a kind of infatuation, intoxication, obsession. The brain activity is similar to the effects of some drugs. Under this influence, we often think that the other person is perfect and life will be a dream come true. Especially if we're quite young and we've taken most of our ideas from books, movies, and popular songs. This state doesn't last. There's a reason so many fairy tales and romantic comedies end with a kiss or the proposal or the wedding. Or maybe there's a tragic ending, they both die so that you don't have to deal with the rest of life. So, because what would happen when Juliet nags Romeo to take out the trash? Or when Prince Charming thinks that Cinderella spent too much on shoes? So those are very stereotyped examples, but you get the point. And just a general comment, we all appreciate all of the five languages. It's not that we don't have all these needs, but generally one or two of them will be most important for each of us to really feel loved. Chapman talks about how we each have a love tank, and the contributions of others help us keep that tank full, making it easier for us to reciprocate in loving them. The first language is words of affirmation. These are verbal compliments on our partner's activities, qualities, appearance, achievements, just reminders that we love them. It's easy to take our partner's or our children's good actions for granted and only speak up when we think something is wrong. Now, some people grow up without a lot of affirming words. Some cultures are known for being stoic or limiting praise. So you have the famous Scandinavians or the tiger mother who feels like too much praise would spoil the child. Of course, the words of affirmation need to be sincere, and it may take practice. Dr. Chapman encouraged his couples to write down lists of things they admire and appreciate about each other. And words of affirmation could be written. A note left for a spouse or a text could make someone's day. When we have a request, we can phrase it honestly and positively. We could phrase it with an affirmation of the other person. A pitfall of this language is manipulation. In a way, you could say that about all the languages. The point of this book is not to give you ways to get your partner to do what you want. It's just like the first song that we had, You Begin by Giving Love Away. It's to show you how to give your partner the love that you really do feel for them, or your friend, your child, and so on. So for words of affirmation, it's not about pressuring your partner. For instance, I'm encouraging my spouse to lose weight when the spouse has never expressed that intention. Certainly there are many ways to support a spouse in something that they do want to achieve, and the sincere and affirming words are a large contribution.
So Renee has something.
Okay. Turn off that wall. So I just have like a slide after each one that's kind of, I read the child edition, the one for children, and then the singles one. So affection and love is expressing the appreciation for the very being of a child or the being of the person. Again, it's not meant to be manipulative, as Robin said. Praise, we think of praise a lot with kids, but praise comes into play with everyone, really. Chapman says to make it true, no fudging on it, and specific. So instead of just saying good job, you can say good job on spending time building your block structure or something a little bit more specific than just a good job. Encouragement, to instill courage, give courage to attempt more. I saw how you did X. So you're just like saying that you noticed something, that they're trying. You also don't have to judge everything that a person or a child does. You can just say, I noticed that you did that, and then listen to what they say back. And then I love you is not a conditional statement. Again, it's not like, I love you, will you do X for me? It's not manipulation. And then something, you know, is to quickly apologize for any harsh, critical, or negative statements, especially with younger people. I mean, with everyone, really, but, you know, every once in a while we might say something that we regret, and it's really important to apologize and say, I made a mistake on saying that. I'm sorry. It doesn't really take it away, but at least it makes it a little bit better. And then one example that they had for kids, which my own mom did and I really liked, was a note in like a lunchbox. And I just, it would not always like for a specific reason. It was just sometimes like, have a great day. And sometimes it was like a birthday note or something, but I just thought that was a really nice one. So those are a couple from the children and single ones.
Okay, the second love language is quality time. And so this is what, the first example, the woman was complaining that her husband was always busy. Quality time really varies from couple to couple, depending what's important to you. Some people go dancing, right? For some people, watching TV together could be a way to avoid each other, but other people might be sharing the experience and discussing what they saw. And this is another example where couples are encouraged to make lists. Maybe there are some activities that one partner doesn't like or can't physically do. Some people thrive on group activities and can't wait to go out with friends after work. Maybe the partner really needs quiet time to recharge, so we could be creative. People really are busy, but maybe you could schedule something, meet your spouse for a short lunch, even if it's just for fast food. Set up ahead of time a date night or a time to spend time with a friend, child, or so on. A pitfall of this language is feeling pressure to be together constantly. It is healthy for each person to have interests and friends outside the relationship. One person might feel they're being dragged to something they don't like. On the other hand, they may learn about something that they enjoy. I would never follow and enjoy baseball if it weren't for my husband. I think I'll mention here that love languages can change over time, especially if they're based on assumptions from our childhood. When I was young, my family lived on a farm. My parents never went anywhere in the evening. There was nowhere to go. We spent time at home, so I thought that was normal. Dan's parents were very involved. He lived in the suburbs, and they were on the church board, the park board, the school board, and many other activities. When we got married, I used to complain that Dan was gone too much. And then he played a lot of sports. Often I would go along to his games just because I had nothing else to do. But over time, I started to get my own life. I went back to school, I got jobs, I joined groups of my own. Our kids grew up, so I wasn't so desperate for him to come home and take them off my hands. And now these last couple decades, he does travel a lot, and I usually just say, bye, have a good time. Enjoy having the house and my time to myself. So over time, some of these things may change what's important to you. Certainly that would make sense with children.
So quality time is also getting to know a child or a person better. It's not just like the time you spend with them. And they had a bunch of examples. He had a bunch of examples, and these are ones that I'm sure lots of us can think of. Including kids and chores and errands, trying to make them feel a part of it. And I was like, sometimes that's easier said than done. There was an example he gave, and I was like, have you ever done this with a child of take your child, oh no, that's on receiving gifts, take your child to a toy store just to look at the toys, but not purchase anything. And I was like, yeah, that does not work well.
especially with younger children. So, I mean, obviously, you have to tailor them to what works with your family. And scheduling one-on-one time is really important. So things like that Jason and I do is, one, to give each other, the other person, a break, but also to have some one-on-one time is, like, on the weekend. Let's say Saturday morning, I'll take Coraline, that's our older one, to, like, an indoor play place. And then Jason's at home while Audrey naps, so he can kind of do whatever he wants. And then in the afternoon, he'll take Coraline on grocery shopping while Audrey naps in the afternoon, and then I get to do what I want. So it's, she gets one-on-one time with each of us alone, which I think is important, but then also we get a break, which is important as well.
All right, the third love language is receiving gifts. This one is low on my priorities. I remember a coworker being really upset because one of her four children didn't send a Mother's Day card. I really felt like she was speaking another language, but obviously this really meant something to her. Now, it doesn't mean I don't enjoy getting a gift, but again, I think it's a reflection of how I grew up. My parents were really not interested in Mother's Day, Father's Day, their own birthdays, or any material things. But for some people, it's not that they're materialistic, but certain things have a real importance to them if they got that from someone they love or inherited it from a family member. They represent something. And gifts do not have to be elaborate or expensive. It could be bringing home a single flower. It could be making a little paper sculpture. If you have a spouse with this love language and it's not natural to you, you could make a list of small things to do to please your partner. Often a clue to the partner's love language is what they do all the time. So my sister-in-law not only tracks everyone's birthday and anniversary and gives thoughtful gifts and sends cards, but she presents them beautifully. It's always wonderfully done with, say, a basket, ribbons, everything coordinated. So as a person who doesn't think of that sort of thing naturally, I try to make an effort to remember her birthday with a present. A pitfall of this language is substituting money for love. The spouse who tries to buy someone's affections is probably doomed to fail. And we need to at least try to give a gift that the other person will actually want. So that's a typical sitcom thing where the husband gives the wife a vacuum cleaner as a birthday present when she really wanted jewelry. On the other hand, I would much prefer the vacuum cleaner. So it shows that you know your spouse if you give a gift that is something that they will really enjoy.
And yeah, Chapman also talked about be careful showering gifts in lieu of the other languages for kids, especially. This was one that actually came from the singles edition, was the level of gift giving can have a mismatch. So like, for example, if you're dating someone and you give them like a really big, expensive present, the other person doesn't feel like they're at this level of a relationship, it can make someone really uncomfortable. So you have to really think about what level, and again, talking, communication is really important in relationships to make sure you're at like a similar thinking level. Chapman suggested, other than like birthdays or maybe some winter holidays, choosing some gifts together, which I thought is kind of nice. And that's a nice way to know that you're going to get something that the other person likes, especially with kids. It's kind of hard sometimes to know what exactly they want. But with my daughter, I asked her for a Christmas list this year, and I asked it a couple times, and each time I asked, it was like totally different objects. So we just kind of made our best guess on that one. And then I thought this was kind of nice, is finding a special place in your house or in like their room if it's for a child or a grandchild. And Chapman talked about, for those who have receiving gifts as a love language, one way you can kind of clue in on this is if you notice that they do prominently like display gifts and they like will show people gifts in their room or in their house. So that can also be a clue if this is someone's love language.
The fourth love language is acts of service. So this is the one where the spouse says, well, what do you mean I don't love my partner? Look at all the things I do around the house. If the partner's love language is words of affirmation or receiving gifts or quality time, they may appreciate their spouse's work, but it doesn't particularly make them feel loved. On the other hand, I am all over this one. Never mind the flowers, they're just going to die anyway. Fix the leaking faucet or take the snow off my car, I'm thrilled. I love it when someone does things that make my life easier. So this is an area where stereotypes continue to play a role. Many people grew up with a father who rarely entered the kitchen or a mother who never mowed the lawn. We bring these expectations to our new partnerships without even discussing them. And then we resent our partner for not doing what our parent did. Why aren't you baking like my mother? And this is why studies have showed that same-sex couples have fewer arguments about household chores than heterosexual couples. They don't start from an automatic default. They have to discuss who's going to do what based on preference, availability, other factors. Phoenix still loves to wash dishes, so he's a good catch for somebody. A pitfall of this language is assuming you know what will be a service to your partner. Now, you probably do know many things they'll appreciate, but it never hurts to ask or make a list. Now, they may have been hinting or nagging you about something. And where I think about this is these days there are a lot of services available to do things for you. For instance, for groceries, you can either order ahead and pick them up or you can have them delivered. I like going to the grocery store. I like to see things and touch them and try samples. And no one has ever come up with the service I want, which is to take my car, take it to the gas station and fill it up with gas, check the oil, because there's no aesthetic component to the gas station like there is to the grocery store. So just knowing what your partner would like is always helpful.
So acts of service are physically or can be physically and emotionally demanding. So we also must pay attention to our own health, make sure we're taking care of ourselves. And loving service is a gift done freely, again, not trying to manipulate, like, I'll do this for you if you do this for me type thing. One thing that Chapman talked about in one of the editions was asking, because, again, you might think you're being helpful by cleaning up, but some people actually will find that insulting, like, why did you do that? I can do that myself type thing. So would it be helpful if I did X can be useful. This was mentioned in the context of like a roommate situation, but I think it can also work in other contexts as well. For kids, being a role model for doing acts of service, when we think of like social justice type things, so doing those yourself, you can be a role model. And then some examples specifically for kids was like even, you know, help practicing throwing and catching, which my mom did with my sister and I, we both really enjoyed. Serving others, and then I put the bike in there because he also mentioned fixing a bike, fixing something that's broken for a child, just like a bike or getting something ready can be an act of service. It does not have to be some really huge, grandiose action. It can be just small things.
And the fifth language is physical touch. This is an innate human need. In the early stages of love, there's usually plenty of touch. Even for those people who don't consider themselves huggers or touchers, historically, a reason to get married was to be able to have physical contact sanctioned by society. Physical touch runs the whole gamut. Many of the couples who saw Dr. Chapman had reduced physical contact, and they assumed that's just what happens over time. But often, this reduced contact stemmed from resentment over not having their love needs fulfilled, such as hearing affirmations or feeling their partner's attention. And just like the hedgehogs or the sheep, some people are more physical than others. It might be due to how you're raised, your personality, experiences you've had. Again, he recommends practice. If my partner wants physical contact and I feel like, well, I'm just not a huggy person, he says, you could practice. Now, the pitfall of this language, especially when we're talking about people who are not in a permanent relationship, is the whole world of consent when dating but even in a committed relationship. It is important for partners to communicate what they want and don't want and have that honored.
Yeah, and the consent was one, too, that the book for children was written in 2012, and then the one for the singles was 2017, and I actually did see quite a difference between them. There was pretty much no mention about consent in the children one, which I really didn't like. I thought there should be some discussion on that. But then in the singles one, there was a little bit of, like, not exactly consent, it kind of like danced around consent, but inappropriate touching, like abuse. So there was some more dedicated to that. But this was an area, one critique I have was that I would have wanted to see a bit more on that, because it's important. A couple additional thoughts. So with these are with like the kids ones. You can't figure out a primary language for children under 5, according to Chapman. And Chapman also says that they do have a primary one, but the other 4 are also important, and that the primary one can change like through childhood, and I actually think it can change also after childhood as well, depending on your situation. And again, the importance of unconditional love was something that was very permanent through the, especially the children edition that I read.
So these are the languages, and so there are a couple questions that people have. Well, what if your partner's love language doesn't come naturally to you? Dr. Chapman says, so? He said, my wife's love language is acts of service. One of the things I do for her regularly as an act of love is to vacuum the floors. Do you think that vacuuming floors comes naturally to me? My mother used to make me vacuum. All through junior high and high school, I couldn't go play ball on Saturday until I finished vacuuming the entire house. In those days, I said to myself, when I get out of here, one thing I'm not going to do, I am not going to vacuum houses. I'll get myself a wife to do that. But, he says, I vacuum our house now, and there's only one reason, love. You couldn't pay me enough to vacuum a house, but I do it for love. And next question, what if my partner isn't being lovable? Do I have to be the one to do all the work? Well, Dr. Chapman addresses this with a passage from the New Testament, but secular counselors and self-help books basically say the same thing. The only person whose behavior you can change is your own. Chapman's clients regularly found that when they took on showing love to their partner without expectation of immediate response, surprising results did occur from their partner. But we can't go into it in order to make the other person feel or do anything. It really is like that song, you have to give it away. And Chapman states love is a choice. And there might be relationships where it is necessary to end the relationship. But so many of the couples that he mentioned really wanted to be together. They wanted back what they had when they first met. No one should stay in a relationship that's unsafe or unhealthy. Another question is how to know if you're giving your partner what they need. Well, you could actually ask. So at the end of the book, it talks about sort of like a job review. Tell your spouse you've been thinking about your marriage and have decided you'd like to do a better job of meeting his or her needs. Their suggestions will be a clue as to the primary love language. Or if they don't make suggestions, you could guess the love language based on the things that they've complained about over the years. Then for 6 months, he says, focus your attention on that love language. So there's no instant gratification. And at the end of each month, ask your spouse for feedback on how you're doing and for further suggestions. You also could begin to start asking in a positive way for the things that you need. So this book is quite a fast and easy read. There are many copies in the library. If you like, you can skip over the references to Christian teachings because really the information stands on its own. And I would say, just like with any self-help or self-development book, I recommend you use what works for you and don't worry about the rest. If nothing else, you could have an interesting conversation with your partner. And there is a quiz in here you can take for determining your love language if you are not sure. And do you have something else for me?
No, I think that's... there is also, you can go online. There's a website, of course, that he has that you can also take a quiz online as well. If you didn't want to go to the library and get the book, you can go online.
So, and you might be able to see how these could also apply with siblings. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're like, how could this sibling be so different from me? Or work people at work. Definitely, you may not think of it as a love relationship, but it's a relationship where you need to support each other. And being able to give people what they need could make a big difference. So do we have some comments, questions? Well, yes, we do have a lot of tendencies. And sometimes our tendency under stress is different from our tendency when we're not under stress. But we do tend to have defaults that are the most likely to apply in certain situations. Yeah, I was reminded of another somewhat related thing at work. We actually... Our managers asked us how we wanted to be recognized. Like, I would love to go up in front of the group and have everybody applaud. And some people, that would be a punishment to them. They just want to have maybe an email that says, good job, you did this really well. And they do not want to be singled out in any fashion. So in the same, that could really apply with children. The things that one really thrives on, another one abhors.
That's actually one of those stories, and I forget which book. It might be in multiple books, actually, that this gentleman was, to practice, he was supposed to end his phone call with his parents, who never said, like, I love you, to say I love you at the end. And the first couple times, it was just, like, silence. And, like, yeah, like, one of the parents was like, that was interesting, later in a conversation. But he did it over, like, months and, like, continued just to say I love you at the end of the phone conversations. And then at the end of several months, the dad said, I love you too, back. And for the gentleman, it was very meaningful to actually have heard it. Like, he knew that it was there. But so that was another one that you can't, like, change other people. But if you continue giving things out, sometimes you can get something back in return. So, yeah, that was actually in the, that was in the book. Maybe it was your, no, I'm kidding. That's your story.
And that reminds me, we could also be generous when our partner is trying to give love. Because Dan's dad, forever, I mean, Dan was 60 years old, and his dad would say, oh, do you have enough gas to get back? You know, did you check your oil? And Dan would be so annoyed. I've been driving for so many years, and it's easier for me because it wasn't my dad. But that's your dad's way of expressing his love for you. He's concerned about you.
Thank you, everyone, for your comments and stories. Closing words before we go, and Kate is going to come back up.
Having let go, set our intentions, named our curiosity, committed our energies, and given ourselves over to lives of balance, purpose, and meaning, let us begin again in love.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming. Please extend the hand of friendship to those around you and greet your neighbor. You can join us for coffee and conversation afterwards. Thank you all for coming. Thank you.